It is half past the hour on a Tuesday morning. Dr. Don Clark joins us from Garden Valley, Texas. Don, a biochemist by trade with the oodles of experience in the pharmaceuticals, which is one of the reasons we've trusted him to this point with stories on COVID and vaccines and masks and lockdowns. And we've trusted him explicitly on matters of history and faith combined, like the book of Genesis, for example.
That's a scientific term, isn't it? Oodles?
Oodles? It is. Yeah.
I think so.
It's a measurement of
it's
volume.
It's like poodles, but oodles.
Only doesn't have a P.
It's kind of like scads. Yeah. Scads and oodles are equivalent, roughly.
Heaps and gobs.
Yeah. Don is a member of the Board of Creation Moments. Want to add that, too. That means he has a scientific bent, and he's concerned with creationism, and God is creator, and he has a deep reservoir of knowledge, and I'm one of the best Genesis teachers I've ever heard from. But we turn our attention to mammoths this morning. Apparently, They're staging a comeback. We could expect to see mammoths by 2027. So says a company in Dallas called Colossal.
And just so you know, I didn't make that word up.
Yeah.
The American Heritage Dictionary of the English language has it in their pages.
What word is that?
Oodles.
Oodles. Oh, it does. Okay.
Oodles.
Oodles is a great amount or a number.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a noun, and it's an abundance or a large quantity.
To derive from the Latin oodles.
Oodles.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
So that's the right pronunciation. All right. Okay.
Well,
I'm glad we got that straight.
Yeah.
Well, I guess so.
Hate to use an unofficial word, but we skated by that one.
People would say though, it's one of those things that Dave made up.
Jurassic mammoths. It has to do with DNA and research, and they're finding they're uncovering mammoths, aren't they? They're discovering mammoth bodies up north, Don, and they're starting to mess with the DNA.
Well, yes, we've had frozen mammoths, obviously, in the north. Those have been discovered for a long, long time. What's different about this is we actually have a company that is going to do some cutting and pasting, if you will. So they're taking some mammoth DNA. They've been apparently analyzing mammoth DNA, and they're looking for the genes that produces hair and fat. And so they've determined that apparently the Asian elephant is about 99.6% equivalent in their DNA to the woolly mammoth.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are proposing to take to basically cut and paste in these the genes for hair and some of the other characteristics of the woolly mammoth into some skin cells of the Asian elephant, producing stem cells. And stem cells are kind of non-differentiated. They're non-differentiated cells. And then taking the nucleus from those non-differentiated cells and putting it in an egg, a denucleated egg for the Asian elephant, thereby. And then to make matters even more complex, they're going to impregnate this into an African elephant.
Ooh.
So we get all the elephants involved.
Kind of the global influence there.
With the hopes of creating a woolly mammoth again.
Well, I suspect I'm no DNA scientist, but I think if you take the hair and the fat cells and put them into an African elephant, you get a fat, hairy African elephant.
Yeah, who's not going to be too happy because, you know, unless you transport him up to the up into Canada and to the
cold climate,
the frozen tundra, which is what they want to do with these things once they get them. The technology that they're using is not new, but what is new is the number of genes that they're trying to transfer at one time, and then trying to obviously recreate the woolly mammoth by doing this. So who knows what they'll come up with. Maybe it will work and maybe it won't. Many scientists are kind of, you know, saying, well, I don't know if this is necessarily going to work. It's fairly complex, hasn't been done before, but you're using technology that has been done. You're just combining a lot of different technologies and techniques that haven't been combined. And so it might work, but their ultimate goal is to take these woolly mammoths, these newly created woolly mammoths, and bring them up to Canada, and thereby hopefully changing the environment in Canada so that Canada is green again, especially in the frozen areas of Canada, and thereby affecting climate change.
Now, wait a second. I'm missing something. If methane is a problem, isn't adding mammoths adding to methane?
Oh, but it's not the methane. So there, yeah, they'll add a little more methane.
Oh my goodness, yes,
a lot of methane. Mm. But they have to find food first, which is going to be a major problem for them. And you know, this is the type of thing that you run into when you have an evolutionary bent as opposed to a creation bent. So on the creation side, the mammoths disappeared during the Ice Age. Mm-hmm. Okay, that we know. And the question is, how did they disappear, and why did they survive at all in a frozen area? If you look at it from the global flood causing the Ice Age to begin with, then you look at what was happening in North America, there was a swath of actually grassland and vegetation up in the area where they found these woolly mammoths. And the woolly mammoths and other animals were quite capable of surviving in those conditions, because the warm ocean breeze would blow over the continent and create a, you know, as kind of a safe haven, if you will, of environment for these types of animals. Well, as the Ice Age pressed on, and as the temperatures of the waters decreased because of the Ice Age coming on, then it created much different conditions, and finally those areas that were covered with vegetation dried out, because as the Ice Age progressed, then you didn't have the warm moisture coming in from the oceans, causing this nice environmental condition that these animals survived. Instead, what happened was you had these massive, massive dust storms that were created, and that's what buried the mammoths. You can find whole mammoths buried in, you know, hundreds of feet of dirt or dust storms, that they were covered very rapidly. So the dust storm had to be tremendous in order to do that. And they found these mammoths with food in their, you know, in their bellies and in their mouths. Mm. So they were in the process of trying to eat and survive. And lo and behold, these massive dust storms come, cover them. And the rest is history, because it's been frozen up there ever since. So they want to take these mammoths and then move them back up into the frozen tundra. And, you know, a lot of people are skeptical of this because they're not going to survive. You know,
unless they can raise their own food, how does injecting them into Canada create a greener Canada? I mean,
well, they're hoping that they'll eat the little shrubs that, you know, are up in the tundra, and then they poop, and then that will fertilize the soil, which will then allow larger vegetation to grow, and, you know, the cycle begins.
They're there for fertilizer then.
Okay. Now, yes.
I've got another article about this guy, Lamb, Ben Lamb. Ben Lamb is 39, and he was born in Austin.
Well, he's the entrepreneur involved in the Colossal Country company in Dallas, right?
That may explain that he was born in Austin. May explain, you know, a lot of his ideas or not. I'm not sure, but he also wants to make the Tasmanian devil or tiger. And the dodo bird. So, I mean, he's got a number of now that was the dodo bird wasn't necessarily a cold climate critter, was it?
I don't think so. I think there was islands in the Pacific. No. I think were there.
And the Tasmanian devil or Tasmanian tiger would have come from Tasmania.
Well, he must see money in this. Maybe he's creating a Jurassic Park. They call the process de-extincting.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
One of his investors is one of the producers of the movie, The Jurassic Park.
Oh, well, why not?
Thomas Tull.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Thomas Tull. And then the other investors include Paris Hilton and the Winklevoss twins, and they were the original investors in Facebook.
Oh.
And he's already raised $75 million.
Mm-hmm.
This is an article in Science and Tech, and it says here that he expects to create his first woolly mammoth by 2028, so 5 years from now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, and then this article, this article is in the. Thank you for finding that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I figure he's got to see some profit in here. That's what he does as an entrepreneur. But repopulating the Earth with now extinct species would be kind of cool, I suppose. But it's kind of like playing God, isn't it?
Well, and the business model, that's what I'm curious about, too.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Yes, how do you make money off of this other than, okay, we'll create these animals? I mean, I can see if you could reforest, for example, parts of Canada by using these woolly mammoths. You know, elephants, we know that elephants eat a whole lot,
mm-hmm.
and they need a lot of vegetation to keep them alive. And there's not a whole lot up there at the moment to feed these things. So it's going to be an interesting experiment to see, one, if it works at all, and, you know, to see if indeed he can they can recreate these animals. I mean, they would be just fun to see in a zoo. You know, you'd have to be, the woolly mammoth would have to be in a little bit cooler climate, because I'm sure they would be, they'd get overheated if they came here to Texas. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So they'd have to transport them quickly to a cooler climate. So I don't know if in their laboratory, if they've got, facilities for housing baby mammoths or anything, but
well, one well, problem
only
at a time,
Dallas, and it would be interesting just to go visit if indeed they get this accomplished. So maybe they'll start a special zoo or something with these recreated, or resurrected, if you will, extinct animals.
Or maybe there's a future time in your grocery store will have prime rib of mammoth,
and
you could eat like a caveman, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's another article of interest here, and this one troubles me. The mammoth one is kind of a fun one. I mean, I'd like to think it's going to work, and I'd like to see a picture of a video of a living mammoth. I don't think I'd want to be there in person, but that would be interesting. But this is about the Big Bang, and the problem is. Cosmologists are discovering, you know, they've set an age of the universe of like 13 billion years, but they keep discovering things in the cosmos that are older than that, and they're having trouble explaining that. So this one guy has come up with the idea, well, if we just double the age of the universe, all that problem goes away. That's Finagle's law. which is something that, that they know about in cosmology. Can you explain this idea of doubling just on whim? Double the age of the universe? Is that what they're discussing?
Well, what they're actually admitting to is that, so the age of the universe comes from the Hubble constant and this idea that the further out an object is in space, then the faster it is moving away from us. So, you know, Hubble kind of charted the guesstimate as to the distance of the stars based on its luminosity, and then made they had to make some estimates as to how fast that star was moving away.
Something called the red shift, right? That's what that's like Doppler radar.
The red shift is involved, and the greater the red shift, the idea is that the faster it's going. And so they plotted, he plotted all of this out, and then he came up with a nice linear graph. But it was like a scattergram. So you've got this line going through all of these data points, and it's a scattergram. So you've got error bars that say, okay, is the slope, you know, this much, or is the slope this much? And we can't really say for sure, so we put error bars around that. And
in other words, we make assumptions to justify the end result.
There are some assumptions about that, but mm-hmm. I mean, from just purely statistical analysis, and you know, this is the type of thing that's done, you know, all the time. So it's not like this is foreign math or anything. This is quite usual. But you do have error bars. So the slope, for example, of that line will determine, okay, the age of the universe. If you go out to, we can't see any stars beyond this point, so therefore we think the age of the universe is this. If you change the slope, you know, the age of the universe, if you change it upward, for example, the age of the universe is going to get less. If you change the slope downward, then the age of the universe is going to get more. And so this fellow, Rajendra Gupta from the University of Ontario, is saying, well, you know, we kind of just need to push the factors a bit, and maybe we should double the age of the universe. So going from the typically accepted age of the universe in an evolutionary point of view of 13.8 billion years will just make that 27 billion years. Now, the good thing is that, you know, most Big Bang scientists aren't going along with him, at least as yet. And what's causing all of the problem? Why do they even want to do this in the first place? Well, some years ago, we launched a new telescope into space. So you remember when that Hubble telescope was launched into space?
Yeah, it was a big story.
And mm-hmm. And it wasn't, when it got launched into space, the objectives and stuff, the optics got kind of messed up a little bit, so they had to go up and fix that so that things would be back in focus. Well, they built a bigger telescope and a better telescope, and it's called the James Webb Telescope, and they put that up in the space several years ago. And so the James Webb Telescope has been bringing back beautiful pictures, extreme exquisite detail of space, but there's been some problems. For example, they found this star that's called the Methuselah star, because it looks like the oldest star, it's the brightest star and the oldest star in the universe, and they are having trouble dating the age of that star. So they're dating, you know, the age of the star. It could be 13 billion, it could be, you know, 12.5 billion, it could be 11 billion. We don't really know, but it can't be, because the star looks old. I mean, it doesn't look young. In the theory is that the further out it is, the younger it is, and it shouldn't look mature.
What you're like, saying this, that
like
this,
our sun, for example.
This is like a burr in the saddle of astrology. I mean, cosmology. This is something that bothers them. Well, call me a pragmatist, but what do I care whether it's 13 billion or 27 billion? How does that change my life?
Well, if you get it, well, the original estimates was that it was older than the age of the universe, which obviously it couldn't have been. Mm-hmm. And so there is a problem. There is a problem there. So they had to, eventually tweaking it, they finally said, well, okay, this is maybe 12 billion years old, and it put it within the 13.8 billion age of the universe. Still didn't explain why the star looked so old. And then the Hubble telescope is looking out in space, we're analyzing data, and lo and behold, we're finding galaxies way out there that should be young, but the galaxies are nice and tightly wound, and they look like our spiral galaxy, which is obviously a mature galaxy. So they're saying that these galaxies are look mature, and they're way out there, and this is causing a problem for the Big Bang as well. Because the further, like I said, the further out in space you look, the younger things should be. And indeed, the James Webb telescope is showing that's not the case. Hmm. So what it is proving is creation, by the way.
Hmm.
That God created the universe. And when he said, let there be light, and when he said, let the, stars appear in the sky, and he created them at the same time. He didn't create them billions and billions of light years away from each other, but he created them at the same time, and he created them, fully mature. I mean, it wasn't a evolutionary type of thing. He just created them. And so it fits the creation model, but it completely destroys the Big Bang model. So we've got the Big Bang evolutionists have a crisis on their hands. The more and more data that the James Webb telescope brings back, the more it's going to show that, hey, the universe looks like it really is young, and that everything was created at the same time. So that's where we're heading with this.
Has there ever, we just researched the term oodles. David did that for us. How about the term throwing in the towel?
That's actually a serious question. It seems to me, and this is a very, very specific outside of the room vantage point, is that the evolutionists in human being and animal evolution and plant evolution and now cosmology evolution are having the same troubles, and they're finding things that don't fit in their model, and that usually indicates the falling of the evaporation of a theory. That eventually, very soon, somebody's going to find a theory that will fit all of these things better.
Yeah, it's called the theory of creation. I mean,
yeah, right. I mean, it's somebody will have to knuckle under and say, okay, I guess you were right. And doesn't it seem that way to you that these
they won't do that? They can't do that. They
just refuse. They just refuse it.
They can't do that, because if they do that, they have to acknowledge a creator, and therein lies the problem. Evolution kind of explains away the need for a creator, evolution, whether it's evolutionary biology, cosmic evolution, whatever it is, it explains away. Of course, it doesn't explain, where the beginning came from, mm-hmm. but at least it explains that, okay, here, if we just evolved, from from methane and stuff, then, you know, we don't, there is no need for a creator. And right. So that in therein lies the problem. So they cannot give up their theories.
Mm-hmm. They can't throw in the towel.
You know, you lived close to Dallas. I think you should drive over to Colossal to take a view of his.
We should come up with a gang of cowboys and herd them up north to Canada. There'd be work
over to the Woolly Mammoth factory. I mean, you could get over there and you could be the reporter on the spot.
I like that idea.
Right, exactly. You go.
What, you're about an hour and a half from Dallas?
Mm-hmm.
Drive. Yeah. Okay.
Head them up. Move them out.
And we would have firsthand information.
There you go.
Outstanding. Yep. Don,
you brought us some light and common sense this morning. We're grateful for that. And I think we could use some of that around here. Don, by the way, a member of the board of Creation Moments, their website, creationmoments.com. You can go there and find lots of scientific information that explains, supports, and defends the biblical story of creation. And it's a good place to spend some time, creationmoments.com. Don, we'll see you in a week. Do well, and hopefully we'll look for some rain for you in a week or two. Okay, I think it's coming.
We definitely need that.
Yeah. Don, thanks. Bye bye. We'll see you.
You're welcome.
See you, Don.
So long. All righty. See you, folks.